I am Oscar García Bustos from Mayador Cider.
Episode number 78 of Cider Chat. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are speaking with Oscar Garcia Busto from Mayador Cider in Asturias. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment. New listeners to this podcast might like to know that the first segment of this episode is typically always catching up on news out and about on Ciderville and some little news of note. Then about 10, 12 minutes in, we usually go to the main chat, which will be with Mayador Cider based in Asturias in Spain. And again, there'll be more on that chat in a moment. In the meanwhile, I'd like to just kind of share with you a notification. Anytime you get tagged out there in social media, you get a notification. And I received this both on my Twitter feed, at Cider Chat, and on Instagram. And my handle there, I guess, is at Cider Chat Ciderville. And what I saw was a posting, or a photo, I should say, of a car's dashboard. And they were obviously playing episode 77, U.S. Cider Trends 2017. And that's a Nielsen marketing group. Well, they basically do market analysis, and they are working in conjunction with the United States Association of Cider Makers. That was last week's episode, or the episode previous to this. You might be listening to this weeks from now, right? But anywho, so I was stoked just to see that photo, and then I started reading, and what it said, it brought a tear to my eye. And it's from Yake Cider, and I'm going to recap it. Basically, they've been driving 12 hours heading down to the Washington State Cider School from Canada. I believe they're up in British Columbia. And all along the way, they have been listening on this 12-hour drive one way, mind you. 12 hours one way. That is righteous to go and learn about cider education. Tip of the glass to you, Yake Cider. And so they've been listening to Cider Chat and up and down that travel, and also on all their travels to cideries while they were in class. And you know there's a lot of cideries in Washington and along that route. They dug back into the archives and caught up on the oldest episodes, listening to 30-plus episodes on that trip. Wow. That's amazing, and I'm just so glad I got to go for that ride with you. How much fun is that? And all the people that have been on Cider Chat kind of driving along and hanging out there, that's exactly what I hope for. I dig talk radio. I dig learning and hearing things, and I really, really enjoy Ciderville and hanging out with you. So thanks for taking Cider Chat along. Thanks for posting that on social media. You can't imagine how that made my day. I was kind of like, my jaw dropped, and I was like, wow. And it also helps promote the podcast and let people know, because people are still discovering this. So I'm going to ask you out there in Ciderville, grab that phone of your friend at your next meeting, or when you're sitting back enjoying a cider, or at the bar and you're chit-chatting about how you love it. If we want to get cider more heard, I don't think that's a good grammatical way to say it, but if you want cider to get out there and you want it to get to you and really help promote it in your way, well, one way is to actually share this podcast and tell people about it. It's like word of mouth. Just like if you're having a good glass of cider and say, dang, this is really good. You know, buddy, I want you to try this. Well, I hope you would do that with this podcast too. And certainly, again, a big tip of the glass to Yake Cider for doing that. Yay! Well, Palms, you've been practicing. You were pretty much spot on with that cheer for Yake Cider.
Perry has had his practicing, Rhea.
Well, you do know, Palms, that no one has left a recent iTunes review and rating for Cider Chat. So there's not really anything for you to read this week, Perry.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, Rhea, because last week on Late Night, as we were watching De Zeus and Meru, they had Rick Ross and you know how I do like my hip hop, on the show. And guess what he was eating?
We know the answer to that.
Of course you know the answer, Medlars. We were all watching it together. Let Rhea guess.
All right. Thanks, Medlars. Let me see if I could do this on my own, though. Was it an apple?
No.
Okay. Could have been a Medlar if he had brought back some Medlars from, like, Australia or New Zealand, you know, or maybe Medlars down south of the equator where it's now currently winter time. They would be kind of perfect to eat now.
Guess again, Rhea.
Could be a quince, but again, that'd have to be like south of the equator, and I think it'd be a little too late.
Not this time, Rhea. Maybe next time.
So not that. It had to be a pear.
Precisely. It was indeed a pear. Yes, a pear was on that very popular show, De Zeus and Morrow, with Rick Ross walking in and holding it proudly. And I think we're going to have a photo of that up on the show notes, aren't we, Mr. Quince?
Yes, we'll make sure that we have it on the show notes with him holding it straight up and down so everybody could see the pear, Perry.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Ah, I love it. Anytime there's a palm up there on prime time or late night in this case, and I think that show is on Viceland, so you must have been like hanging out down in the palm cave where you have direct cable. I don't really have such things up in my sector of the cider house. But you guys are always having so much fun. So yeah, we'll definitely have to check out that photo. That's really cool. And thanks again, Perry.
Always a pleasure, Rhea, and I hope someone leaves an iTunes review and reading soon so I could read it.
Medlars?
You bet, Rhea.
Mr. Quince?
Pleasure.
Oh, but the pleasure is all mine, working with you Palms. It's never a dull day in Ciderville. Speaking of which, I have one more thing I just want to kind of direct Ciderville towards and maybe to check out. I just saw a posting on Facebook and I shared it to the Cider Chat Facebook page. And this comes to us via Country Lane Homestead, who also happens to be an avid listener of Cider Chat. So thank you very much for that. The photo is of their hop vine setup. And I'm talking about, you know, if you consider putting hops in cider, which I recommend. You know, why not? It is a lot of fun to do, and I'm really enjoying some of the hop profiles coming out with cider. And in this case, what they're doing is they're setting it up like a maypole. So a maypole has a center pole and then strings coming out, creating a circle. So they use the strings for the vines to grow up, and hops grow really high. But the pole itself is set up much like a flagpole that can be tipped down to the ground. So you might want to take a look at that. I'll try to pin it to the top of the page once this episode goes live. And just to kind of make it really easy, if you're listening to this weeks from now, you have the pole and then you have it on a hinge system at the base of the pole. So once you're all done at the end of the hop growing season, the pole can be released at the hinge and slowly, I imagine you want to really, you know, have some support there because those vines are going to be heavy if they're all kind of, you know, filled with all the cones. Lean it all the way down to the ground and then cultivate your hops. And I imagine it doesn't do too much damage to the vines. They're pretty hardy. And what a cool way to set that up. I thought it was brilliant. So I wanted to share that with you. Check it out on the Cider Chat Facebook page. And thanks again to Country Lane Homestead for posting that online. In this week's main chat, I have the privilege of not only introducing you to Oscar Garcia Busto of Mayador Cider in Villavicio, Asturias, and that is a little bit north of Gijón. And if you've been a regular listener of Cider Chat, you'll know that I was in that region in September at the International Hall of Gala Ciders. This event is also known as SISCA, and that's spelled S-I-S GA. And what happens there, and what I've been able to figure out, is that they go back and forth between like the anglicized name and the Asturian name, because the Asturians have their own alphabet. So the Anglo name, you might say, is International Hall of Galasiders, and then they hone it down to Cisca. And so it could be a little confusing. In fact, the city where it took place, Gijón, is spelled G-I-J-O-N, and then it's also pronounced Zihun. I think that's the way you pronounce it, and that's spelled with an X. It kind of changes back and forth, so you're a little kind of eeny, meeny, miny, mowing when you're there. And it could be confusing, but it's doable. You know, just have a little sidra, talk to somebody. They're all quite friendly. So I was at that event. Was very international, very European focused. I was the only American there. There was an expat who's a cider maker in the Czech Republic, but I was the only American there at that time. And that cidery in the Czech Republic is called Smiling Dog. I can't help but smile while I'm saying that. Part of the International Hall of Gala Ciders is a gala dinner where they have a culmination of the earlier events of the day where they have a huge judging. Over 1,000 ciders are entered, and I was able to participate at that. That was absolutely amazing. And then we meet later that night to have a multi-course meal where there's probably about 7 different ciders served with each course. I tell you, they know how to do it right there. Absolutely. You have to get to Asturias and experience it. And I was introduced at that time, right before dinner, to Oscar. And I also was able to meet his cousin, Verissimo, who is also part of the Mayador family. And it really is a family business. And I'll get back to that shortly. So let's just talk about Mayer, or what might be known as to crush apples. There's a Mayer season, and that's a season of crushing apples. So that's where that name came from. And it's actually part of their logo, which is of an apple, and inside is of a Mayer, or in this case, a Mayador, like a matador, but in this case, a person who crushes apples. And this is what their grandfather, Manuel Busto Amandi, did. He stood and crushed apples with what you could imagine, like a long wooden, not a paddle, but maybe it is more round at the end, and in a large, like, wooden vat, you can imagine, just crushed apples. What a way to go. Those of us who are cider makers out there, imagine making cider commercially like that. It just kind of boggles the mind. And some of these things you could actually see at the museum. I think it's Museo de la Sidra in Nava in Asturias. That's also a worthwhile visit too. So that's their history. I love learning a new word that has to do with apples, Mayer, and I really enjoyed getting the chance to speak to Oscar. Do bear with us, because there was a lot of cocktail chatter, or I should say cider chatter, in the background as all the commercial makers and everyone attending CISCA, or the International Hall of Gala Ciders, was there just kind of hobnobbing. It was just so much fun. So we're going to head right to that chat now and grab a glass with Oscar Busto Garcia of Mayador in Villavicio, Asturias. And we'll be led into this chat with some traditional bagpipe music from Asturias. So you're saying you make 6 million bottles of sidra, not just sidra.
No, not only natural or still cider.
Okay.
My grandfather started to make cider in 1939, only still cider, natural cider. And in 1966, when he was 60 years old, he began to make sparkling cider with the label, with the brand Mayador. Mayador is in the old times the person that crushed apples before press to get the apple juice.
Mayador.
Mayador.
Mayador. It's not Mayador.
Mayador.
It's
Mayador. Mayador. Mayu is the tool. Is the wood tool for in order to crush apple.
Right. Yeah, so I think I saw it at the cider museum. In Nava.
Yeah, in Nava.
It's like a rum.
That's right.
Wow. So that's what your grandfather used to do?
No, my grandfather take them. They call the image for the business.
Wow. Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
So you went into like your family's business essentially, right?
Yeah.
And you're producing all this cider, and are you just for the region?
Yeah. Not only Spain, more or less half of our production is exported to 65 countries around the world.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, in Asturias, you know that we are a lot of cider makers. We are only 1 million people in Asturias.
Nice.
And out of Asturias, cider is not very popular, only in Basque Country, maybe in Galicia, in the north of Spain.
Right.
But in the rest of Spain, only the sparkling cider is drunk in celebration, in Christmas. The rest of the year, only we take cider here in the north of Spain. We need to export the cider.
Right, you need to export it. So you, how much, what percentage of your business are you exporting then?
Well, now it's near to the 50%.
50%?
Half in Spain.
Right.
Natural cider, sparkling cider, rosé cider, and 50% from the rest of the world. And when I told you 5 minutes ago, it's not only cider.
Sparkling juice.
From the Muslim countries.
Okay. Yeah. And what countries are your main export partners?
Well, it's a very good question. Well,
what do you call it?
Thank you.
Mainly the Spanish, South America. It was our first market, but now in the north of Europe, in Asia, even in Africa, we have a good importer that they can spread our products in different countries.
But
now we are growing in the United States with wine cellars.
Oh, okay, wine cellars, yeah.
You know that in GlenCap, Great Lakes International Contest.
GlenCap. That's a Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition.
Okay. We won 2 gold medals with the natural and sparkling cider, Mayador.
That must have felt really good.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
Really exciting.
We are already froze.
Yeah.
Very, very exciting because, well, United States, they are big words for us.
They are. It's a big country, and the,
you know that it's growing the interest for the
big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, really big time.
You buy a bottle.
Yeah, and there's a passion to kind of learn about all the different ciders,
yeah,
not only in the U.S. but around the world, and getting an understanding for cider like the type that you make.
Yeah.
So, can I ask you, when you explain your cider, how do you explain it to people? What do you say, like, well, what do you make, you know? And And do you just have to say cider and they know, or do you find that you have to explain? Because it's a little bit different than, well, is your cider also kind of being poured like from the, no, sorry.
No, sorry.
Are you doing it from like that meter pour?
Yeah.
So how do you explain that to like the American public, or how does that get conveyed that, well, you probably shouldn't just pour it in the glass and that you pour just a little bit? And
well, the natural cider, the Asturian natural cider, is a very fragile product. Because it's
fragile,
a natural.
Fragile.
A very fragile. soft product.
Okay.
It's a product that you must try with softly, because it's natural. It's only apple juice, 6 months in oak barrels, and then, well, we in the mix of the process, we change different barrels in order to get better flour. But it's the same. It's only apple juice. When you can see the cider in the bottle, you can see in the bottom
little leftover pulp.
Sorry. And you need to shake it, and it's very important that the bottles don't get cold in the fridge. It's better with cold water. The purest.
What do you mean by cold water? It's better with cold water. So you want to
cold water, but not too cold. It's about 14 degrees.
Okay. You never want to serve it really, really cold. It has to come up the temperature a little bit.
Less cold than beer. Less cold than beer, and more cold than wine.
Right.
It's between beer and wine.
Okay, all right, okay. That's a good descriptor.
And it's a natural product, natural liquid, but they have natural sparks. That is the reason, because we pour from height the cider. In the state, it's not necessary that people know how to pour the cider from height. It's from 20 or 30 centimeters. You can let pour the cider in the glass, and it will better in the wall of the glass.
And the wall of the glass,
In this way, you get natural spark and better flowers and taste.
Mm-hmm. And that's really what you want to be smelling and tasting, that really kind of little bit of sour, and that have that little effervescent and a little bit of like a head on the cider.
Yeah,
that's what you're looking for.
And other thing very important is that you have to drink the cider in one go, quickly, because the natural spark in other way you lose.
Right. Now I just want to like define that, because I know some people listening will think you shoot it back like a shot, but it's not quite like a shot. I understood that you could kind of take a little bit of time drinking it back. You don't have to like do it in one big gulp.
Yeah, that is the reason.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure, because that could be a little intimidating. But
only for the natural cider. The sparkling cider is a different product.
Different.
But the carbonic is added, and it's filtered. It's a cider filtered, and you don't need to shake it before, and you can get cold in the fridge.
Right, and you can pour it
in champagne glass.
Sure. Wonderful. And when you're making the cider natural, what is from the beginning that you've mashed the apples and pressed the juice, what amount of time does it take for that product to be finished and put into the bottle? What's the amount of time from beginning to end when you're making it? Is it about 3 months?
6 months.
6 months.
In 6 months,
okay.
Cider is early cider, but you can put in bottles.
Okay,
six months.
And it goes to two different kinds of lactic and malolactic fermentation?
well, I am not, I'm not cider, because this is not my
specialty.
Part.
Okay, that's okay, fine, okay, that's fine,
but,
yeah, that's all right.
No worries.
And I had
Mayador is a family business, but my cousin is the person that works with the liquid.
How many people work at your company producing 6 million bottles per year? How many people do you have?
In 2000 year, we moved from Villa Viciosa urban center to another bigger building, and we started the expansion, the spreading, and well, we get more barrels, not only wood barrels, we take inox barrels.
No thanks.
That is our product. Yeah, it's sangria de sidra, cider sangria.
I saw that.
That is our product.
Yeah. And is that a new product?
A new product.
And how's it doing? Is it popular? Yeah. People are receiving? Because that's
sangria in Spain is very popular to the foreigners.
So what does that mean, sangria cider? What are you doing? Are you making a sangria and then blending it with cider?
Natural cider, citric. The only one is similar to the wine sangria. Wine, orange, lemon.
Wow. Yeah. Very exciting. And that has like a little screw cap on it. Yeah. Very accessible.
We think that people around the world prefer sweet flour.
Mm-hmm.
We love our natural cider from all times, and now it's very popular, but it's acid and sour cider.
Right.
And we need to send a lot of liters, and not all people, like natural cider.
Right.
We have a range of different products. Most of them are sweet products.
Sweet products. Well, sweet products. You got to go where the market is, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Years ago, but now we are.
But you're seeing the market, and you're saying, I'm not going to sit idle. Yeah. I'm going to like go in on it, and you're diversifying too, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, not just saying it's going to be made one way.
Yeah.
I mean, that is exactly.
But here in Asturias, people love natural cider. People think that the rest of the cider is a poor cider. It's not good cider.
Well, good thing it's a big world.
I think
it's a very big world.
I can see. But the mentality, the mind, if you don't travel, it's difficult.
Yes, I know.
To see other things that you know.
Right, absolutely.
The gala dinner was calling us, so Oscar and I had to part ways. But before we did that, we were able to take a photo, and I felt like it was kind of like, high celebrity, because they had a fun backdrop. So you'll be able to see on the show notes for this episode, number 78, both Verissimo, his cousin, and Oscar, and myself. Next, let's read a little bit of an excerpt from the Mayador history book, which they created to celebrate their 75th anniversary in 2015. The story in this history book begins with Oscar's grandfather, Manuel Busto, who was born in 1906. At the age of 19, Manuel bought a ticket on a steamship that brought him to Buenos Aires. There, he worked a job in a hardware store and dreamed of owning his own business one day. But in 1932, when he was very close to achieving his goal, his father died prematurely back in Asturias. Manuel decided to head back to Spain to help his mother and siblings, José, María, and Guadalupe. It was then in his free moments that he began to wander around on horseback, especially in the village of Morian, where he begins to court Consuelo Alonso Cuesta. Soon afterwards, they got married. And that, in this history book, it says, is when the story began. Manuel was seeing that other businessmen in the area were starting to sell cider that they had originally been producing for their own consumption. Manuel Busto saw in cider his chance to make it as an entrepreneur. Doesn't this story sound so familiar to so many of us? And so, in 1939, he decided to fund M. Busto, a cider press where he produced and sold cider. He rented many presses in the region, and there's a list of them in this history book. Consuelo, it notes, also shared her husband's entrepreneurial strive and supported his idea, whereas others, lacking their visionary spirit, probably saw in it a far-fetched project. So, for you cider makers out there, just striving to make ends meet or striving to create your goal of your own cidery, think of Manuel and what they were able to do together, both he and his wife, and having that common goal. So very important. Manuel decided to open his very own cider press in 1941. So think about it. For those first couple of years, he was renting space like many people do today. It was at that time that he bought the former sugar factory and got a loan from the Bank of Asturias. He also invested part of this loan to buy machinery that allowed bottling a volume of 15,000 liters of cider every year, which back then, that was a lot for, that's a lot. 15,000 liters of cider every year, that's a lot of cider, even for a small cider maker in the U.S. right now. It continues with, as a business took root and grew, the family also became bigger with the birth of three daughters, Conchita, Alicia, and Consuela, who studied and worked surrounded by boxes of cider, turning the press into their playground. That's pretty darn cute. And so common in Ciderville, isn't it? Manuel's business model was based on quality and hard work, and he was also intuitive. He had the idea to engrave his cider bottles that were being produced in an old glass factory in Gijón. He was 40 years ahead of a measure that would eventually become compulsory in the sector. He also promoted his cider using 10-bottle boxes, while all the other presses preferred the customary 12-bottle box. And it doesn't really say why, but I kind of find that interesting. It's just a little bit of a standout, kind of like in the cider market now, when you saw that shift to cans or the different types of bottles that are being used. He was also, it says, a pioneer in trading cider vinegar in Spain, which up to then had only been of domestic use. And even today, Mayador still produces cider vinegar. He was also the first to produce sterile apple juice in 1971. Now, I'm reading from page 8 of this history of Mayador. And we all know, well, at least some of us know, that sidra is meant to be poured from at least a meter's length. So a meter would be if you raised your arm above your head and held the glass down below your belly button. That would be approximately a meter. Well, you can imagine if you're pouring a lot of that, it might get kind of tough, especially if you're running a bar. So Manuel, in 1964, patented a machine to pour cider. Well, it was actually registered as a patent on December 4th, 1964, and evidently it's still used today. And what it does is allow you to do this meter pour, and there's a black and white photo that's really worth a look. It has, it's a man pouring the sidra, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bottles that are all upside down. And above is the insignia or the logo M. Busto, because that was the first name of the cidery, and then it got transformed into Mayador. And the bottles all have this kind of contraption that I looks like he's able to kind of tip the handle and open one bottle at a time to do that long pour that is so well known for Sidra. And Oscar spoke about that earlier, that it needs to catch the edge of the glass and create that foam. And you want to drink it back in one gulp. But as we were both talking, you don't do it like a shot and shoot it way back, although some people might. I could attest, not a good idea. It could make for a very long morning the next day. Instead, you know, you kind of, you know, gulp it back. And I would recommend a slow gulp so you could still get the flavor of it. And because this type of cider, the cider natural, that this region is so well known for is very acidic, and you want that aeration in there. Otherwise, once it goes flat, it really changes in taste, which I think kind of makes it kind of hard to judge, especially for judging in the U.S., because a lot of folks don't really have this kind of perfected yet, and that pour is so important. There's professional pourers in Asturias, and I've met some of them. So that is quite the little contraption. It's on page 8 in this history book and really worth a look. On the next page, there's a photo of the groovy gals of the 1960s all drinking a bottle of M. Busto cider. And then there's also a photo of the bottling line at the cidery. It's pretty cool stuff. And it says, in the 1960s, the wind of change freshened things up in Spain. Not only did skirts get shorter and women's hairstyles grow bolder, but also people began to change their social habits. And so cider began to lose ground to new drinks that were here to stay. The cider maker knew that he had to diversify in order to survive, so he looked to sparkling cider, which would allow him to have it be served alongside the other trendy drinks in cafes. At the age of 60, he took his business to another level by acquiring a machine which allowed him to bottle 2,000 bottles an hour, which even today, and today's standards, would be pretty darn good in some small cideries. By expanding the range of products, he had a new brand, and he called it El Mayador, which was the name of the person who traditionally extracted apple juice manually, as we mentioned earlier in this chat. On February 6, 1966, the founder's nephew, Raul Garcia Busto, put the first El Mayador label on the bottle and turned the two brands into one. I suspect today, if you were to walk into the facility at Mayador where they are making their cider and pressing, it would probably be a big jaw dropper. I imagine you, all of us, would have a bit of stainless steel envy seeing massive tanks, and that's what I suspect you might see. Look, there's going to be a lot of links in the show notes to this. You'll be able to look at this Mayador history, the PDF file, and some of the photos. And if you go to page 11 in that history book, you'll get to see a photo of Oscar when he was 16 years old packing some boxes. I love the tradition of family surrounding cider. I love the interconnectedness of community. That's what it's all about. And I believe that the apple is really proud to be part of that too. It's just meant to be, having cider keep on going up. And you can find all that information on the links to episode number 78. Hoo-wee, we are getting close to 100 episodes of Cider Chat. You know, this is like a journey that is just keeps on taking me way out to the world with you, Ciderville. It just, whew, It blows my socks off. You know, over 16 countries, I don't know how many states now in the U.S., and the number just keeps climbing. And there's so many more stories to tell. And I hope if you are out there in Sartorville and have a story that I get to touch base with you. I'll soon be posting a page on exactly how to connect and, you know, some of the parameters around doing a chat. Because as this gets to kind of, you know, take on a life of its own, I have to kind of reel things in a little bit and stay organized. At least have some, organized chaos, I suppose. And that is a little bit of a specialty of mine, after all. One specialty that I haven't perfected yet is YouTube and iMovie and managing all that. And I know last week in the U.S. Cider Trends podcast, I made a promise that I'll be posting on YouTube the 53-minute or so PowerPoint and audio of that presentation. And I did it all. It took about 13 hours to kind of have my computer go through it, and it came up, and it was just, the screen was black. I don't know what happened. Somehow iMovie, that's what I work on a Mac, didn't really like the format. So I got to figure that out and kind of get a spare moment to do that. But I'll keep on doing that. And, you know, it's practice, 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 just like Manuel Busto. If he stopped, you know, back in the 30s and said, oh, I'm not going to become a cider maker, well, we wouldn't have Mayador today. And you have to just be tenacious. And that's why I often say that podcasting is a lot like a cider making. People don't necessarily know what a podcast is. They don't know how to necessarily acquire it or how to find the podcast online. Just like so many ciders out there, they could be a little bit difficult to access. And there's a learning curve to all of this, isn't there? In terms of knowing how to get your craft down, whether it's cider making or podcasting, or in this case, getting a YouTube clip up. It's a lot. It's a lot. And so we're all kind of kindred spirits in that quest to keep on moving forward. If you're a commercial cider maker, do join the Cider Going Up campaign page via Patreon too. And join with the likes of Current Cider in Pennsylvania, which has been a supporter of this podcast since I launched that program. Each time that you're out and about, make sure that you ask for a Current Cider. You know you're going to be getting some tasty, well-crafted cider from Pennsylvania. And in turn, you help support this podcast. There's so many good people out there in Ciderville, and I hope between now and next week you get to hang out with them and raise a glass and join this chat. This is Rhea Wincaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!